Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, I've been looking forward to today's conversation because our author today writes in a genre that, for some reason, I've seldom had the chance to explore within our author interviews. He is G.P. Hutchinson, a member of Western Writers of America, who fell in love with the Old West decades ago, the gritty reality of the era, the daunting yet breathtaking scope and scale of the land, and the colorful, if somewhat fanciful, tale of heroes and heroines who overcame the odds. Texas was his home for a few years, and subsequent visits to states throughout the West have only served to deepen his enthusiasm for the region and his appreciation of its people. In 2015, he published his first Western novel, Strong Convictions, which won him the Western Fictioneers Peacemaker Award for Best First Western of that year, as well as National Indie Excellence Award. Then, Strong Suspicions, the second volume in the Emmett Strong Western series, garnered a gold medal in the 2016 Reader's Favorite International Book Awards. Regarding Strong Convictions, classic Western film star Alex Cord wrote, G.P. Hutchinson has the gift to tell a compelling tale, enlighten you without preaching, and keep you on the edge of your seat. He takes you on unexpected trails, populated by flesh and blood characters of depth and substance. Well, a graduate of Louisiana State University and Dallas Theological Seminary, G.P. has lived in Costa Rica and Spain, and he currently resides in upstate South Carolina with his wife, Carolyn. Besides writing, he enjoys spending time in the mountains and horseback riding whenever the opportunity arises. So after the interview, be sure to visit his website at gphutchinson.com, where you can sign up for email updates and be the first to hear about new releases. But don't do that yet. Stay tuned, because right now we are going to hear from the man himself. Welcome to the network, G.P. Hutchinson.
Thank you so much, Pat. I appreciate you giving me this opportunity to chat with you a little bit.
Oh, I'm actually really looking forward to this because, as I mentioned, for some reason, I have not had a true and true Western author with us. So let's go with that for a minute. Let's talk about the Western genre. What would you want listeners to know about this particular style of writing?
Of course, Westerns were the bread and butter of American entertainment in the mid part of the 20th century. People growing up in the 1950s, 1960s, and prior to that time had a steady diet of Westerns, and there were changes that came along the way with particularly in the realm of movies. The Clint Eastwood type of Western began to change things a little bit, and for one reason or another, I think having to do with a lot of things going on in America at the time, people begin to have perhaps more difficulty relating to Westerns, but I think there's still a tremendous amount, Pat, for readers of all sorts of backgrounds and with all sorts of interests to find a great deal of enjoyment in reading Westerns.
And we'll probably delve more into this topic in a moment. Your first book, Assumatory, what was the message in that book that caused you to become the writer you are today?
Well, Assumatory came about as a result of a series of serial installments that I was doing on a website ahead of the time. I'd visited Japan a couple of times just prior to that, and I really, really enjoyed Japan. So I began to try to grow my website, and one way I wanted to do that was just sort of have cliffhangers at the end of each of these little short vignettes about Sumo Joe. And out of that, after about 20 installments, I found that, you know, this has got the makings of perhaps a novel about Japan. So I went to work on it. My initial attempt at it, I realized, well, I am really a long way from a publishable novel at this point. But I did have great success when I got myself a writing coach, wonderful coach from Australia, by the name of Marge McAllister, and Marge kind of coached me through a rewrite of Assumatory, and I'm pretty pleased with the product.
So that definitely was not a Western, but it probably laid some groundwork as to what was to follow. Now, you have several short stories as well.
The short stories that I've written are all of the Western genre, and they were all written after Strong Convictions, which was my initial Western.
So how did you then evolve into the Western world of writing? How did you go from Sumatori to Westerns?
I thought that my audience for Sumatori would include a lot of people that in our culture today have an ongoing interest in Japan for one reason or another, fascination with the country and culture, which is a wonderful thing to have. It's a beautiful country with wonderful people. So after writing Sumatori, a number of people asked me, are you going to do a sequel? So I gave it a shot, and I got 40,000 words into that sequel, Pat, before I just got to a point of frustration that making this understandable for an audience that doesn't live in Eastern Asia was just stressing me out. So I just took a step back and started dabbling around. I wrote a few scenes of a dystopian and a few scenes of a modern thriller type thing. And when I just played with the Western, it was the biggest kick. It was just the most fun, the most natural thing. And the words were just flying off the pen, so to speak. And that's the way I got started in writing Westerns. It wasn't that the little dabbling that I did was the groundwork for Strong Conviction, but since I had so much fun with that, I just jumped over and came up with a plot and some characters and dove in.
Oh, I love that. It's so organic and just so fun to find out how people land where they do. Now, are there typical themes to most successful Westerns, and did you know this, or did you just start writing and then find out how a Western typically goes? Tell us about that process.
My childhood, I had exposure to the Westerns on television, everything from Bonanza to Gunsmoke and so forth. And my Saturday afternoons as a preteen often involved going to movie theater and watching the latest Western, something, The Good, the Bad, the Ugly was just coming out at that time, or Rio Lobo, that sort of thing. So I guess in my roots, there is just a sense of this is what a Western is and how it goes. But society has changed a great deal since that time, and as a writer, you start looking at things differently from the way you do just perhaps as a child, just enjoying a story for story's sake. I think the thing that struck me about Westerns is, like any other novel, you start with characters that you really have an enthusiasm about writing for, so coming up with a colorful character and his or her role, and then from that spinning off, what are the biggest obstacles that that character might face and how would they overcome them? You ask me about themes or about issues and so forth. This is one reason why I think Westerns are such a natural for today, is in that era, many of the themes that, or issues, social issues that they were dealing with are still issues we're dealing with today. Issues like racial and ethnic tension, nationalism, the relationship between humans and the land and the resources, environmentalism, male-female relationships, what's the meaning of success in life, or what's the value of family? Those sorts of big life themes are common to both eras, really.
So it's not a far leap from reality. It's just set in a setting that makes it somewhat different.
Yeah, the world of that time had its challenges in many ways, much simpler, of course, than our world today. No 24/7 news cycles, and often a great deal of loneliness, depending on how far away you were from the rest of society, or just trying to survive in their world, like people try to survive in our world now. But the vastness, as you mentioned earlier in introducing me, the vastness of the landscape and the challenges of making a living in that landscape, when there were people coming along that were not a great deal like, perhaps one person is not like another, Native Americans, encountering people that were non-Native, or Hispanics in the Southwest encountering people who were not Hispanics, and vice versa. It's like people living in big cities today. We encounter people of all different ethnicities. And so the the working through of that is still something perhaps that, you know, there are remnants of that in the world we live in today. Mm-hmm. But the setting itself to me is just fun and beautiful and exciting, and life was an adventure.
Absolutely. Let's talk about your books. Give us a little sneak peek. Let's start with Strong Conviction so we can entice our listeners.
Sure. Strong Conviction, as I mentioned, started from just dabbling after working on a novel set in Japan. And as I began to try to come up with characters for that book, if I had any readers beforehand, they might say, okay, what is G.P. Hutchinson going to write next? I thought, well, how do I tie Asian together with the American West, which I'm having such fun with right now? And, of course, we're all familiar with the fact that there were a number of Chinese immigrants in the West building railroads, working in the gold fields of California and so forth. So I thought, well, that's a natural. So the character that I created for Strong Convictions, Emmett Strong, is a Texas Ranger. And you say, well, how do you get Texas Rangers up to the gold fields of California or Nevada? Nevada, as the residents there say. We had an incident in Strong Convictions where the main character, Emmett Strong's brother, is assassinated, and the madman who does this flees to the Comstock country of Nevada and takes up refuge with a powerful brother up in that part of the country. And this very persistent Texas Ranger, Emmett Strong, pursues him all the way up to Nevada, and in the process of chasing down his brother's killer, finds himself as surprised as anybody that he falls for a Chinese immigrant girl.
So you were successful in combining what you knew and where you had written initially, combining different countries and eras within the story.
I felt like it worked out very nicely, and feedback from readers has been they love Emmett and Li Shu as a couple, that the discovering one another and one another's culture is an interesting component of that, and where she breaks with her own culture and he has to be concerned about her acceptance in his culture. So there's a lot of that interracial or interethnic theme that goes through there, but it's in a thoroughly Western story. You know, the deal of good and evil and right and wrong and setting wrongs right and the landscape of the West and everything. So it's thoroughly Western, but it's worked out real nicely. I think people have enjoyed that that chemistry between Emmett and Lee.
That was very smart of you to do that, I think. All right, then the second book is Strong Suspicions. Give us a little peek into that one.
Well, at the end of Strong Convictions, we have Emmett and Lee and their friends returning to Texas. There are reasons why, in the course of the first book, Lee has to flee Nevada, and so she goes back to Texas with Emmett. There are far fewer Chinese in Texas, and so that's going to create some issues with her acceptance there. But just in the course of passing through El Paso, Emmett and his friends find themselves accused of having assaulted a local there in El Paso and robbed him of a sum of money. And Emmett's a Texas Ranger, so he knows there's not anything to be gained from getting engaged in that kind of activity. But before he knows it, there are some people who are trying to get back at him for this and that, and he's got to defend himself from the charges. And in the process, find out it goes a whole lot deeper than on the surface, someone who just wants to blame a robbery on him. It's got an element of the first novel in it, where the evil figure behind all the other bad guys in the first novel sends a notorious gunslinger after Emmett there to try to exact revenge from the first novel, and that just adds to it. There are multiple enemies coming at Emmett in the second novel.
And then the third one, Strong Ambitions?
Well, in Strong Ambitions, Emmett has about had it with people in El Paso treating Lee as though she's not his wife, when in fact by this point she is. And when Emmett's brother-in-law ends up having some troubles in El Paso as well, they just say, well, we're going to pick up and go. And a friend of them tells Emmett and Lee about a new little town that's just popped up. And actually, it's it's not a fictional or fictitious town. Benficklin, Texas, Benficklin, odd little name for a town, just caught my imagination for some reason. But Benficklin popped up and wanted to be this picture of beautiful, quiet, peaceful little community not too far from one of the rowdiest places in Texas. So Emmett ends up being the marshal in that town, and the town that prides itself in being the picture of virtue ends up having a scandalous discovery on its hands not long after Emmett gets there. The body of a young Mexican girl is found thoroughly flailed out on Main Street, and this is unacceptable naturally to anyone, but to the town leaders of Benficklin, they want Emmett to take care of finding out who and why immediately. So it's a murder mystery. Mm-hmm. It's a murder mystery set in the Old West.
Oh, wow. So this winds around. Strong convictions, strong suspicions, strong ambitions. Is there a follow-up?
People have asked. I don't think I'm finished with Emmett and Lee. I think they're a great couple to continue a number of future adventures. But I have been tremendously blessed to have had a contract offered to me. The first three books were published as an independent author. I self-published the first three. And Dusty Saddle Publishing has offered me a contract to write seven more Westerns.
Oh.
So I just thought it would be a little odd to start with Emmett Strong number four with a new publisher. So
yes.
I'm thrilled about the opportunity. But we're going a different direction with Dusty Saddle a little bit.
Oh, how exciting. Yes.
Yeah, it's a big thrill. I'm able to go at it full time. And I've got the first of my Dusty Saddle's novels coming out on August 31st in ebook form, and then within the first week or so of September in print, paperback, and hardback.
Oh, I got chills. I love this. It's a great story for you. I'm so excited.
It's so exciting.
I mean, your books already won awards.
Yeah, I'm really grateful. The award that thrills me the most is the Western Fictioneers Peacemaker Award for Best First Western of 2015, Strong Conviction. And the reason that one means so much to me is because Western Fictioneers is an organization of professional Western writers. And so getting recognition from anybody is certainly a thrill. And readers' awards are a big thrill to know that fans are enjoying the stories. But to have experts in writing Westerns be the ones who judge your work as being the best in a given publishing year, that was very exciting for me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So now you're on a schedule.
Well, a self-imposed schedule. No, I just... I have had a great summer in working on the next novel that's coming out, and the theme of it, the premise of it, is super exciting to me. I've jumped over to the world of Wild West shows.
Okay.
And the name of the upcoming novel is Cimarron Jack's Real Wild West. We've heard of Buffalo Bill Cody and perhaps Pawnee Bill, Lily, and others. There were dozens of Wild West shows in existence in late 1800s and early 1900s. The popularity was amazing. I don't think we in the 21st century often realize how the Wild West show gave so much to the early movie industry.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the modern-day rodeo came out of that. But that's sort of the backdrop for this new novel.
So you're not only growing as an author, you're growing as a person and really learning about a lot of different aspects, which made me think about research. So what do you know about gunslinging and horses?
I wouldn't call myself a gun enthusiast, but I do enjoy researching the weapons of the late 1800s in particular, a transitional period of time. And I think many of the handguns that were carried at the time for quite a number of reasons, were not only effective self-defense weapons or, we'll talk about a few of the uses there, but also beautiful works of art. When you look at some of these revolvers, they were gorgeous pieces of industry and manufacturing, yes, but they were done with a really beautiful aesthetic, I think. But the average cowhand riding in a cattle drive did not wear a six shooter on his hip, primarily for use against other human beings, but rather anything could happen. Sad as it may sound, a horse bolting and you're thrown and you're being dragged by 1 foot in a stirrup, you really don't want anything to happen to the horse, but neither do you want to die in the process. So sadly, a six shooter might be used to stop a bolting horse from dragging you to death, wild animals and any kind of thing. But I think perhaps that contributes to people's reticence, maybe, to consider Westerns as just think every problem solved with a six gun, but that's really not the case.
You were talking about the artistic or the aesthetic value of the mm-hmm. guns, and that makes me think of your book covers, because you pulled your covers from someone who had done some leather work. So tell us about the covers.
Today in self-publishing, indie authors often go to stock photo companies to get images for their cover art. And I really didn't want having the same cover art as any number of other people, and I certainly have a right to draw on the same cover art, which may be used with minor variations. But I wanted something that I could say, this is uniquely mine. It won't be on the cover of any other book. And so Carla Van Horn of Pretty Gear Leatherworks, she does magnificent tooling on leather in Western style, and I just happened to be perusing the internet and saw some of her leather work. I thought that would be gorgeous for book covers. So each book features a different gun rig that Carla hand carved for customers, and had her permission to use these, and I'm really grateful to her, but I think they really enhance the attractiveness of the covers.
No, absolutely. It makes a big difference. And I like the story behind it because, you know, it's a real person who's doing real art in the same genre as your book. Very, very important. Who are Western readers? Is it a dedicated group? Do they ever cross over? Or if they do cross over, where do they come from? Let's just talk about the reader side of this.
Mm-hmm. Probably the largest group of Western readers are people in the demographic that was born in the 1940s, 1950s, 1960s, who grew up with the Westerns on television, at the movies and so forth. And they are avid followers of Westerns. People don't think of Westerns as selling that much. Rarely does one make the New York Times bestseller list or USA Today, although I will say that Gordon L. Rotman's The Hardest Ride was a USA Today bestseller just a couple of years ago. The average Western enthusiast is buying a lot of Westerns. Western sales are healthy. A lot of people don't realize that of the millions of titles that are out there on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or any other source, that Westerns still sell very, very well. And I really think the potential for readers who have not yet tried Westerns, I think if folks were to give it a shot, then they find this is just as thrilling as your average high-tech thriller. Mm-hmm. It's just a different world. It takes you into a different universe. And certainly we could talk about how many highly popular stories today are Westerns just set in another setting. For mm-hmm. example, Star Wars is just a Western set in space, or the initial idea anyway. It's just a swashbuckling story with many elements like a Western, just that happen to be set in space.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's a great way for readers to branch out and to try mm-hmm. something new. Yeah. And then I'm sure they're going to be hooked.
Oh, I think so. I think there's plenty of room for that. If somebody's looking for adventure, there's the adventure of facing animals that are a danger, a threat, or facing people who have reason to come at you and pose all sorts of threats. There's plenty to make you hold your breath when you're reading Westerns, and there's plenty of suspense. Another thing, you know, the cliche ending where the cowboy kisses the horse and gets the girl, you know. there's plenty of romance in Westerns, too.
Well, it sounds like you're just so excited and passionate about what you do. And I think that really is quite evident through our conversation today. And I'm really excited about your new book deal as well. Cimarron Jack is coming out at the end of the month, end of August.
On August 31st in ebook, shortly thereafter in paperback, just a week or so after that, I believe.
Excellent. All righty. So it sounds like you've really grown as a writer, as a person. What have you learned about yourself through this entire writing process through the years?
I think it's just the natural outcome of who I've been all along, I think. There was a point where, you know, how high school students, when they're getting ready to break out into the world, they'll take these interest inventories and see how they match up with their skill set and abilities. Is an idea of what to major in college or what sort of job to look for. Not too long ago, I went back and after being a teacher for a couple of decades, went back and did an interest inventory once again, and I was just surprised how everything that I did focused in once again on the written word. And that is something I really do enjoy, is need a laptop and some ideas, and I love trying to organize and express ideas in written language. So this is just such a gratifying way to do it. I think we can share a lot of messages, valuable life messages, through fiction. And perhaps messages that'll come home in more holistic way than just writing nonfiction appealing only to the brain. I love it. I love fiction. I have found that I absolutely love writing. A lot of writers will tell you they enjoy getting the story down the first draft, but they hate editing. Mm-hmm. As has been said in the past, editing is writing. I love going back and see what else I can tweak or squeeze out of a storyline, add in, enhance, and polish. That's where a lot of the real fun stuff happens.
Yes, not many people say that. You're right, exactly right. People like to get it out, then probably would be just as happy to shove it off to someone else and say, here, fix this.
Because getting that first draft finished is like giving birth, I think. You know, as a man, I can't really tell you exactly what giving birth was like, although I was in the room when my wife delivered our three children. But it does have that that feeling of, let me get to the end of this thing. But no, going back through it a few times, it's a lot of fun to me.
It was like, all right, the kids are born, now you raise them, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Oh my gosh. So as we begin to wrap up, is there anything that we missed that you wanted to bring up today that you wanted to talk about?
I would just like to encourage probably younger readers. I know that in our country today, there's figures that are tossed around about how many people or how few people even read at all. You know, there are evenings when my wife and I will sit down and we're tired. We don't want to, we're just tired. You know, it just feels like drop on the couch and find something on television, bitch. But when we give reading a shot, I find it every bit as relaxing and really captivating. You know, I don't find that I'm just channel surfing and going through 97 things I don't want to watch to find one thing I might. But I would like to just encourage people to give reading a try once again as a form of entertainment and personal enrichment, whether it's fiction or nonfiction.
See, that's a brilliant answer, especially in today's society, is get rid of the phone, turn it off, turn off the television, just unplug. And yeah, you can get so immersed in a book that before you know it, it's midnight and you're still not even sleepy. I mean, it's just a great thing to do.
That's the danger.
It's a wonderful, wonderful way to end the day. So yes, thank you for saying that. You're talking my language there. All right, my friend. Well, as we head out, where can folks go to learn more about you and where can they purchase your books?
Yeah, I appreciate that. First stop would probably be my website, as you mentioned earlier, gphutchinson.com, and that'll introduce people to who I am and what titles have been published. And I've got a few blog articles there that'll perhaps be engaging for some people. You can find me on Facebook as well, GP Hutchinson. And on Twitter, same name. So people can find me on social media that way. As far as availability of my books, everything's available on Amazon. My books to date have been made into audio as well. If you prefer to listen that way, you can go to Audible and pick up audio copies of the three novels and upcoming novels as well. Are they available from brick-and-mortar stores? It depends on where you are. I know they're available. I've heard from libraries around the country that have copies and brick-and-mortar stores here and there. If not, you can certainly ask, and they can order it for you and have it there in a flash.
All right. So the safest place to go is your website, gphutchinson.com, and that's G, letter G, P, H-U-T-C-H, INSON.com, GPHutchinson.com. We talked about your books, Strong Convictions, Strong Suspicions, Strong Ambitions, and your new one coming out, Cimarron Jack, with your Dusty Saddles series. So exciting. I was really looking forward to our conversation today and to learn a little bit more about Westerns and hopefully entice our listening audience to pick up some of these books of yours and to get going on the Western genre. So fun to talk with you today. Thank you for sharing you and your work with us.
Thank you. I appreciate it so much. And I know you can identify with this. You mentioned that you lived in Arizona for a few years. So yeah, I'm glad that your Western connection there is something that we share, and hopefully a lot more listeners will look into the Western genre as well.
Absolutely. That's one of the things that attracted me to you. So thanks again so much, and let's stay in touch. And maybe we'll do this again sometime when some of your new series books are available.
Good deal, Pat. Thank you so much.